Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little about soybean seed treatments. And even if you don't raise soybeans, these seed treatments, or many of them we'll talk about, can go on just about any crop. So we'll get to that as we go through the show today. We would also be happy to take your questions. If you've got any questions for us, you can email us, radio@agphd.com. We are going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a minute here. You could also give us a call, 844-44-AG-PHD. Again, that's 844-442-4743. Or you can find us on X, Ag PhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. So we're live in the Morton studio today, and we have been getting a lot of questions in our Ag PhD mailbag. So let's get to that right now.
It's the mailbag.
All right. First question comes in from Dave. He said, I got some questions on copper sulfate and application. Watched your corn workshop on Acres TV, and you mentioned they use a water-soluble copper sulfate product sprayed directly onto the soil. Yep. We had used a dry product, rather large crystals. It just hasn't been moving our levels. So I found a supplier of the soluble copper product. Okay. I'm just curious how much you're putting out per acre. We're in south central Wisconsin on lighter soils, 10 CEC. Copper levels are half a part per million to one part per million. Our P1 Bray test divided by 30, well, that puts us on the low side.
Okay, so we went through on, last Thursday, Dave's questions just a little bit. And yeah, we're great with copper sulfate. We like doing the liquid. Or I should say a dry, and then it's water soluble and converting that over. Well, I ran out of time before we got to his conversion, because his question was really, how much copper sulfate do I need? And let's just say you're at a half a part per million. So let's just run these numbers quick. I said we'd do this today. Let's say you're at a half a part per million. You want to go to three. Okay. So you just do the math. That's 2.5 parts per million. We have to increase it. So 2.5 times 2, and the reason why we say 2 is we're going to figure for 6 inches of soil. In every 3 inches of soil, I should say, there's roughly 1 million pounds. In every 6 inches of soil, it weighs about 2 million pounds across an acre. All right? So to convert parts per million to pounds per acre, we just multiply by 2 when we're talking about a 6-inch sample. So 2.5 parts per million becomes 5 pounds per acre we need of actual copper. And then you just simply divide by, what's the percentage on copper sulfate? Is that 25%? 20%?
Seems like it's 25, yeah, or 25 and a half. I'll find it in just a second.
Yeah, okay. So let's just assume it was 25%, all right? So you take 5 pounds divided by 0.25. That's going to give you 20 pounds of copper sulfate you would need to apply. So it's really that simple. So would we do that if we had a 10 CEC soil and we owned the ground? Yes, we would. Now, if you're renting the ground, I just want you to keep this in mind. Oh, and go ahead, Darren.
25.2, yeah, so yeah, yeah, 25.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm just pulling up the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. I'm going to put in corn, and I'm going to put in a pretty high yield number. Let's go 250 bushel corn. Here is how much copper you need, and this is assuming that you leave all the residue out in the field, okay? Copper use per year, 0.12 pounds. And remember, we're putting on 5 pounds of actual, so you got a lot of years' worth of copper there, decades worth of copper. And you might say, well, why in the world do I need to put that much on? Here's why. Because nutrients need to be balanced in the soil. Otherwise, they don't get in at the proper levels. It's just like this conversation we have all the time about potassium, and guys with heavy soils, they say, well, I have 200 or 250 parts per million of potassium, and people tell me I'm good. No, you're not. If you've got excessively high levels of calcium and magnesium, I will promise you that potassium's not getting into your plant, and I can prove that to you by just running plant tissue samples every week of the year, and you will see week after week after week after week, you come up deficient. it'll be the same thing with copper. And the other thing that you're going to notice with your plant is you're going to have much better disease tolerance, and you're going to have much better flexibility of that plant, less green snap, all that kind of stuff. So you want to get your copper levels up. All right, what we got next there, Darren?
All right, another micronutrient question. This one's from Adam. He said, I am sending you a label of a dry product, which I've been blending into my fertilizer program to pick up additional zinc, copper, and boron. The question is, based on the form of the micros that are in the mix, are they readily available to my crop the same year? How long do you think it's going to take to make them plant available? I'm in Virginia. Humid, warm, decent rainfall. The mix includes calcium carbonate, magnesium sulfate, magnesium oxide, sodium borate.
Right, the oxide's where we start running into problems. Go ahead.
Same thing on copper, copper sulfate, and copper oxide, manganese sulfate and manganese oxide, zinc sulfate and zinc oxide.
Yeah, so what you're going to find is the oxides aren't going to work very well for you. Darren, you got some more? Go
well,
ahead.
Well, Neil Kinsey had talked about this a little bit too this winter at our Neil Kinsey workshop that we hosted, and he said specifically on the manganese and the zinc oxides, he said they have to be pulverized and prilled or they won't build the soil. So that's something that just because it's in there, yeah, it might not be a great form. The sulfate forms, generally pretty good. The oxide forms, not as much.
Right.
But they could be, depending on how they're processed. And then, you know, with calcium carbonate in there, that's lime. And I always find that interesting because when Neil talks about micros, he's like, ooh, if you put on a bunch of lime, you're going to tie up some micros. Well, here it's just this tiny little amount of lime here. And I know calcium helps with uptake in general, just calcium. So I don't think it's enough lime to make a big difference here.
No, not for that tiny little bit he's going to apply. But yeah, we like the sulfate versions of stuff. So our advice is usually find a blend that's going to be in the good forms and sulfate forms. Otherwise, just do it yourself. That's what we've ended up doing over the years now is, now, and granted, we've got a multi-compartment floater, so we can run some whatever it is. Let's say it's some copper sulfate and some zinc sulfate and magnesium sulfate if we had to, or manganese sulfate, any of those. All right, stay tuned. We're going to talk a little about seed treatments right after this.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/basic.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health. Through awareness, guidance, and action, together we can uproot the stigma.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at verify.com. That's VRAFY.com.
This is Officer Jones calling for backup.
10-4, location?
Kraber, back 40. Looks like we've got Palmer amaranth, kochia, some common water hemp.
Resistant weeds. Copy that. You'll need a good tank mix partner. I'm sending Tough 5UC.
Come out with your hands up!
Guys, we're surrounded.
Crack down on repeat offenders. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix. Learn more at toughonweeds.com. Always read and follow label directions. Tough is a registered trademark of Belgium Crop Protection.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Talking about soybean seed treatments on our show and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD or by email radio@agphd.com. Got Tim Dahl with us right now with Syngenta to talk a little about soybean seed treatments here. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on today.
You know, this market used to be, there are a lot of untreated soybeans out there, and the treatments that were out were mostly just a fungicide or two. I think back to Apron Max days, and man, it's been a long time since then. Now we've got some great insecticides. We've got multiple modes of action for fungicides, and we've got a lot of different diseases that we can protect right from a seed treatment. It's pretty exciting.
It is really exciting, and I was thinking about that last night, actually. When I got started in this industry, we were planting in, you know, Minnesota and the Dakotas, the old hardened soybeans, a lot of bin run seed, things like that. And the investment that a grower has in that soybean crop now is, you know, quite substantial. And these new technologies can really help protect that investment.
Yeah, that's right. You look at the bin run soybean price to today with all the technology, whether it's Xtend Flex or Enlist or whatever soybean the farmer's planting, it's a substantial amount of money that we're trying to protect. And, you know, when we hear about these seed treatments, we think, okay, well, that's going to protect the seed, but it actually lasts a little ways into the season too, giving us good early season protection on a lot of diseases. Talk us through that. What should growers really expect when they spend the money and make the investment on a soybean seed treatment?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was, you know, looking at your Hefty Complete seed treatment, the other seed treatments that are out there. There's a lot of things that we can put on that seed, whether it's, like you had mentioned, the fungicides, insecticides, the biologicals, nutritionals. There's just a lot of things that go in. One of our newer products, Sultrol, for example, because there's so many, I'm just going to pick on one. That adepidin molecule, that fungicide that's important post-emerge, you know, or on a soybean crop or a corn crop to take care of a lot of those diseases, works really good in the ground. And Sultrol, for example, really can protect that soybean plant from SDS and the Fusarium species. The different fungicides, you know, they affect different pathogens out there. And a lot of, like I mentioned, you have a lot of treatments on your seed treatment, a lot of different components, because a lot of those fungicides work on a specific pest. And just as an example, the Cruiser Max Apex has four different fungicides in there. They're really specific to either Pythium and Phytophthora, or Rhizoctonia, or Fusarium. And, with all the different environments that we have, soil types, and again, conditions within that soil, cold and wet, hot and wet, dry conditions, different pathogens rear their heads, and having those different active ingredients is important to control those different pests.
Yeah, it sure is. And you never know what you're going to get for a season. I know that a lot of times we think, oh, well, I'm planting into dry soil. It's probably just going to stay hot and dry. But a few days later, the weather can sure turn. I don't care where you're at. And right. It can get cold and wet in a hurry. So you got to plan for all those different conditions that could be out there. The other thing that we've got, Tim, is more cover crops, less tillage, and more insect pressure. And you think about things like Cruiser, for example, I think it's more important now than it's ever been.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of different conditions and environmental conditions. And then new diseases, and I'm not sure if they're exactly new or if we're just identifying them. There's just new pathogens and new insects that seem to, every once in a while show up, things that we didn't think about in the past. And then, of course, you know, soybean cyst nematode is an issue that we all deal with every day. And what's fun about some of the new SDHI fungicides like Sultrol really have an effect on that nematode as well in a positive way, helping protect that plant. So, yep.
Yeah, a lot of different challenges out there, and it's never going to quit changing. We're going to keep having these challenges going forward, so you got to stay on top of them. And really, for this year, you just have to focus on getting a great soybean seed treatment out there to play defense as much as you can. Talking with Tim Dahl here with Syngenta. He works over in the great state of Minnesota. Tim, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Got Jeremiah Mullick with us right now with BASF to talk a little about soybean seed treatments. And, you know, one of the things that we haven't talked about yet, Jeremiah, is just all the research that goes into this. There are a lot of different active ingredients getting tested for soybean seed treatment use, and we continue to see new products coming to the market.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, we're excited all the new products that come onto market, and putting a product on seed, we got to make sure that it's not damaging that seed in its own way. So there's some little extra complexity when it comes to some of those additional steps and what it takes to develop and bring a seed treatment product to market.
Yeah, safety on the seed is important because a lot of times we do treat the seed up in advance. It'd be great if we could just treat the seed, go out, plant it that day, but it doesn't always work that way. Some farms are pretty big, and it's going to take a while to get everything planted. And then, of course, there's weather delays and those types of things too. When you look at that, which components would you be perhaps worried about? Is it the insecticide portion or the fungicide portion or just some of the other additives that go into this?
It's kind of all of them all together, right? So the whole package, right? We're not just only putting one active ingredient on any seed really ever in most instances. So it's these interactions of all these different products or active ingredients in a single formulation, as well as making sure that they're the active itself is staying there and biologically protecting that seed. Well, when we want it though, once that seed's in the ground, that it's not degrading and that all those components are viable and bringing the value to the grower.
You know, that's one question that we get from farmers. Man, how are there so many ingredients in some of these products, yet we still have so much or so little real estate on the soybean seed? How do these products all work together, Jeremiah, to deliver something that's on a soybean seed at just, you know, an ounce or two probably per unit of seed?
Yeah, these active ingredients are highly efficacious, right? And some of them are really narrow spectrum when you think of products targeting pythiums, right? Those products generally only target those oomycetes, the pythiums. Other products, a product like Olivo, a single active ingredient, but gets you protection against, a fungal pathogen and caused by SDS, as well as SCN, soybean cyst nematode. So it's really a balance of what's the target that you want to fight and getting the most efficacious and broad spectrum protection of that whole package, all the sum of those pieces together.
Now you look at some of the challenges, and Tim was just mentioning soybean cyst nematode and sudden death syndrome, and products like Olivo have been out for a little while. I know there's more in the pipeline coming, but we've seen a pretty nice level of help, especially the visual one is SDS. You can absolutely see, hey, am I getting a difference out there? Nematodes, though, it's hard to see because they're below ground, and unless we have just extreme populations and rough weather conditions, we don't really know where we're at. But I do know this, with most pests, if we don't do something about them, they just keep getting worse. They rarely get to be less and less of a problem.
That's exactly right. Soybean cyst is the invisible yield robber, or in other words, it's death by 1,000 paper cuts, right? You'll never see that above ground symptomology or problems before it's too big of a problem, right? So it's building that active plan. And, you know, starting with taking a soil sample, how many cysts are in those fields to start, using the right resistance package, whether it be 88788 or if there's a Peking line available, and then adding in a strong SCN seed treatment that adds that early season efficacy and yield performance.
Yeah, there's just a lot of pieces to this. It's very much like managing weeds in your field. You aren't going to find just one product that, oh, I throw it out there the 1st of May and I never see a weed again until next year. No, seed treatments have a lot of different components to them. They're all useful for a different purpose. We're talking with Jeremiah Mullick here with BASF. Jeremiah, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thanks. Great to be here.
You bet. We'll talk more about soybean seed treatments coming up right after this.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
Warning, high yields incoming. Upgrading your planter with Germinator closing wheels can increase your corn yields by 13 bushels in no-till and 7 bushels in conventional. Are your bins ready? Call Farm Shop MFG at 712-520-6051.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior strip tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at soilwarrior.com.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out caseih.com.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
Get uniform control in your fields with trusted, hard-working Lucento fungicide. Control the toughest diseases with a dual mode of action fungicide that consistently outperforms the competition in field trials. Lucento fungicide from FMC works overtime for lasting control to help improve crop yields. Talk about getting the job done. Visit your FMC retailer or lucento.ag.fmc.com for hard-working control in your fields. Always read and follow all label directions.
Weeds rob you of yield potential, so rob them of the chance to grow with powerful corn herbicide solutions from Corteva Agriscience. Weeds won't know what hit them, but you will, because you can count on proven top herbicides like Resicor or SureStart 2 or the new game-changing herbicide Cairo to effectively control weeds. That way, you spend less time worrying about unwanted yield-robbing weeds and have more time to power on with your day. Learn more at PowerOverWeeds.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Martin Studio, and we're taking your calls and questions throughout the show. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or give us a phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Taylor on with us right now down in the state of Georgia. How you doing, Taylor?
I'm good. How are y'all?
We're doing well. We're doing well. What can we help you with?
Good. So I've got a question about fertilizer in wheat for hay. I've got a wheat crop grown for hay that we like to take in the boot stage. And I got some liquid nitrogen on really late, probably about 10 days ago. Well, we've had rain and 80-degree temps, and now my wheat's jumped up in the boot stage. And I'm curious if I wanted to go ahead and take it this week. I've got a good window. You know, is any of that nitrogen going to be left in the soil for the Bermuda crop when it comes back? How much of that, do you have any idea how much could be taken up? Or what's your opinion on that?
Okay, so I got a couple questions for you, Taylor. Do you know how heavy your soil is? Like, do you know the cation exchange capacity?
Four to five.
Okay, that's what I was afraid of. How much rain did you get?
Half an inch.
Oh, half an inch, that's all. Okay, well, that's not bad. And as far as the nitrogen application goes, how much did you put on?
I put on 50 units of N.
Actual N.
Yep.
Okay. So 10 days ago is all. Yeah, it's really hard to know exactly how much that plant is going to suck up at that point, And here, right. Here's why. We can look at the charts and we can try to make estimates that way in terms of when the plant pulls the nitrogen in, but it's got to actually get it. And 10 days isn't a lot of time, so we don't know for sure how much got absorbed. Even though you have 4 to 5 CEC, if it was only half an inch of rain, you probably didn't lose a lot. So here's the thing, though. If it's me, I'm just running out there, and I'm pulling a nitrate test. It costs $5, and then I've got a lot better idea rather than me guessing. I'm predicting you're going to find that you've probably got 30 pounds of nitrogen left out there. But it might be more, might be less. I just go pull a nitrate test. And if you want to do that in a couple, three spots in a field or something, you spent 10 or 15 bucks. It's no big deal. So that's how I would do it. And then you'll have a pretty good idea going into your grass.
Perfect. Appreciate it, guys.
You bet. Good luck.
Thanks.
All right, Darren, we had a question come in from Dan that I wanted to get to. He said, last fall we planted some rye on end rows that go up and down a hill. Well, at this point, the rye is about 6 inches tall, and Dan is from southern Iowa, by the way. Anyway, he says, it's a bit wet now to spray without rutting up the field, but I'm thinking that by the time the ground dries out, we'll be wanting to plant. Now, I've heard it's best to spray the rye 14 days before planting to avoid having a green bridge for disease to pass from the rye to the corn. What are your thoughts on this? And would you delay planting if the rye didn't get sprayed on time? Maybe we should have used a cover crop that would winter kill. Well, Dan, you brought up a key thing here. Rows that go up and down a hill. For the best erosion protection, you want the rye. So like for us on our farm, we have some of that too, but we just put oats in as a cover crop. I'm usually hoping the oats gets big enough to help me in the spring because we're not doing tillage after that usually. But this last year, it was drought. Oats didn't get a great start. We ended up putting more manure on than we maybe normally might on a lot of fields. And so my point is, and that manure is injected, so that in effect is tillage. So we don't have near the cover that I would like on our rolling hills. So I understand why you would want the rye. So the reason why I always like oats is because we're in a really dry area and anything that's growing in the spring is going to suck up some moisture. Well, you're in a wetter area, so it's not as much concern, but you do want to get it killed off as quickly as possible. Now, as far as this green bridge thing, yes, you're right. I mean, we like to have that ground black for 2 weeks prior to going into another crop to reduce the green bridge. And it's not just disease. It's also insects, mites, basically anything, any pest that could go into your crop. But in this case, I don't think I'd worry about it too much. I'd just go plant. You're really running out of time, like you say. So don't get too concerned about it. Just understand you may have more disease pressure in that corn. So I'd be maybe spraying an additional shot of fungicide or maybe spraying an early shot of fungicide. Or here's what we like to do on our farm. We're using Zyway. We use that foaming system, so it's a Zyway 3D. That works really good, and then we don't have to worry so much about that green bridge concern. So if it's me, that's probably what I'm going to do on my farm.
Yep, and keep an eye out for insects as well. We really are always concerned about that coming out of a cover crop.
Yeah, and to the question of should I delay planting, no. There's no way I'm ever delaying planting, worrying about I might have a little bit more disease. You might, even if you killed off the rye, because there's still plants there. You might still have bugs come in. You might still have disease. It's really hard to know. So don't delay planting, because we know delaying planting, on average, hurts yield.
All right. We've got Matt Miles on with us right now. He works with the Extreme Ag Group and farms down in the state of Arkansas. Talking a little about soybean seed treatments. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm burning the candle at both ends today. How are y'all?
I'm sure you are this time of year. Hey, you know, one thing that came up earlier in the show, we had a guest on from Minnesota who said the investment in a soybean crop today compared to what it was a generation ago, it's an exponential change. We just have so much out there to protect. Starting with a seed treatment seems to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, there's no question. That's going to be the, you know, that's a building block for success, you know, later on. Whether it's soybeans or any other crop, there's not any crop. Even though we're warm and, you know, and sometimes not wet, and you would think down here in the South that, you know, we might could get by without a seed treatment. I learned that the hard way on some double crop beans. It's just going to be mandatory, you know, in my operation on any crop, especially on, you know, on soybeans.
Hey, you bring up a good point there, Matt, because you talk about double crop, but we hear farmers talk all the time, well, I was going to get the beans in late April, early May, and now it's mid-June due to whatever bad conditions out there for weather. Now I'm coming in late. Well, I might skip it because it's going to be warm. They're going to jump out of the ground. But like with your double crop beans, even if they do jump right out of the ground, that seed treatment's still going to carry through the early seedling stages as well for more protection.
It does, and I was that guy, and we did a test, you know, just brown beans versus you know, fully treated beans, and we were looking at, you know, just on population alone. So my idea was, you know, it was dry, it was hot. It's going to take another day or so for the bean to emerge because that moisture's got to soak through that seed treatment, and I think I'll be better off with a brown bean. When it was all said and done, we were about 10,000 less population with the brown seed than we were the treated seed, and ended up with a little better yield, more than enough to pay for the treatment, you know, on the side-by-side comparison. So it made a believer out of me.
Well, all the guys up north are a little jealous. As soon as they hear Arkansas, they're like, how far along is Matt? How's planting season going down there?
Honestly, I feel like I'm behind. We had our first full, what I call a day of planting Saturday, that we didn't have to worry about rain, we didn't have to worry about cold temperatures, and of course Easter was Sunday, and you know, I wasn't gonna try to, you know, stretch that out on Sunday. But it's going good now. A small chance of rain tomorrow. We've planted probably at the end of the day 1,000 acres of soybeans and 600 acres of corn, so a lot better than it was looking last week for sure.
Well, good luck to you, Matt. Stay safe down there. Hopefully the weather holds, that you can get all that crap in soon.
Thank you, buddy. Y'all have a good week.
You bet. You as well. Yeah, there's a guy raising or shooting for 100-plus bushel beans every time. And, yes, you say, okay, well, I can see for him, he's got a lot of investment to protect. You do, too. And that's the whole thing. We're putting in the money up front to give us a chance to go for some yields like that. And even on your farm, if a huge yield is 50, that's a lot of dollars per acre out there you're protecting with a soybean seed treatment. We'll talk more about it coming up right after this.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Can you predict the future? I can't. That's why when I'm planting soybeans, I treat with Heads Up seed treatment. With more than 15 years of research, Heads Up offers proven protection against both white mold and sudden death syndrome. So no matter what the year throws at you, you've already taken that first step to be prepared. Don't let your beans suffer from disease when they're just starting to look their best. Tell your seed dealer you need Heads Up seed treatment. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad-spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on armyworms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio, along with my brother Darren. We have been talking a little about soybean seed treatments today and answering your questions and calls. I just want to say a couple more things on soybean seed treatments as we wrap that up, and then we'll get back to the Ag PhD mailbag. Back probably 20, 25 years ago, when commodity prices were relatively low, and we didn't have much for soybean seed treatments. We had inoculant, but even that inoculant wasn't that great. And we had a couple of fungicides. That was really it. It was hard to pull the trigger and spend money because the products just weren't that great. Today, we have dramatically better soybean inoculant. Today, we have dramatically better fungicides. And you can, quite frankly, get a package of fungicides, usually three or four great fungicides at way less than you would have paid 20 years ago for two questionable fungicides. And then on top of that, you can get insecticide in there. And then biologicals, besides the inoculant, we're big believers in that too. So altogether, like in our farm, we're going to spend about $16 an acre for the soybean seed treatment. But when I get about 40 components, you go, it's really not that bad. It's a bushel and a half of beans to make it pay. And then because we put the seed treatment on, we get free replants and we get free insect resprays for certain bugs. It's really hard not to do that. So anyway, I just encourage you to take a look at what you're getting with your soybean seed treatment, because about every seed dealer has something different, and ask lots of questions. As long as you're getting some good products, I don't really have any big issue with it. I will say this, though. Some years it pays great, and other years it doesn't pay at all. And that's the challenge with the soybean seed treatments, and quite frankly, seed treatment with anything. And honestly, you think about almost anything we do in ag. It doesn't pay all the time. And you might say, well, nitrogen always pays. No way it does not. So go add some more this summer. You say, oh, I know I need to side dress. Really? Leave some untreated. We've had all kinds of guys do that over the years. Sometimes it pays, sometimes it doesn't. I'm not saying don't fertilize properly or anything else. I'm simply saying we don't know for sure what pays and what doesn't in any given year. We live in an uncertain world, and farming is very challenging in large part because of the weather. But with soybean seed treatments, just like anything else, what we're after is, does it pay on average over time? That's what we've really got to look at. Same thing with herbicides, same thing with fungicides, insecticides, fertilizer, anything we're doing. Hey, over time, does it pay? Is it a good investment for me? I mean, we're gambling as farmers every day. We just want to stack the odds in our favor. That's why we got to do our homework, got to use the right products at the right timings, and we go from there. All right, let's get back to the Ag PhD mailbag.
This question came in from Ryan. He's over in West Central Illinois. He said, cation exchange capacity is heavy, 33, and I've got a lot of magnesium, 43%. Calcium's at 54%. That doesn't leave a whole lot of room for everything else.
Nope.
We don't have drain tile in this field, as you can see by the picture that I attached, flat ground.
Yep.
The water's puddled up there. A few questions for you then. What about my calcium level? you advise it should be at least 60%
yep.
before using gypsum. But my pH, you can see I don't necessarily need the lime.
No.
I'm also wondering
He's
about elemental sulfur.
He's at 55% calcium.
Oh, elemental sulfur, and wondering about nitrogen stabilizers.
Yeah, okay. So a nitrogen stabilizer would be a good idea because not only do you always have to worry about leaching and denitrification, depending on how you apply it, or I should say volatilization, depending on how you apply it. But in this case, you also have to worry about denitrification, where it's going to sit in water in your soil because you have poor drainage. So you've got a lot of factors there. So yes, a nitrogen stabilizer probably would pay for you in a lot of cases. So let's just say that I own this ground. What would I do if it was mine? And again, I'm going to think about it a little differently if I'm renting it versus if I'm owning it. Okay, but I'm going to the landlord if I rent it as the first step, if I did rent it, and we're talking about tile. If I owned it, I'm tiling for sure, getting that done. That's where my first dollar is going. Now, we can talk about this calcium-magnesium ratio. It's challenging. It really is. When you've got 43% magnesium, you got two choices. One, either you can raise your calcium, or two, you can try to flush the magnesium out over time after you've improved the drainage. How you flush magnesium out is with sulfur. Neil Kinsey's been on the show many times and said it takes about 2 pounds of sulfur to remove a pound of magnesium. Well, let's be honest here. You're probably 1,000 pounds long, maybe even 2,000 pounds long on magnesium. Are you really going to put a ton to 2 tons of actual sulfur out there? I mean, you're going to spend over $1,000 to do that. I'm not doing that. So, I mean, maybe I'll address it a little bit over time, and I'll tell you how in just a second. But before I do any of that, what I'm thinking about, and again, drainage number one, what I'm spending my money on next is P and K, and quite frankly, all the nutrients that I need to raise a good crop. So make sure you have good N, P, and K levels. Right now, your K is low, your phosphorus is low, your zinc is low, your copper's, it says very high. It's barely adequate right now. So you don't have to spend money on copper. I probably would spend a little. And your boron is low. So your sulfur is also low. So you see where I'm going with all this. Your soil has a lot of needs. And I'm all for eventually trying to work on that calcium magnesium thing. But for now, I'm working a lot harder on all the other nutrients and going from there. Okay, so over time, how would I address that calcium magnesium thing? Well, for one, I'm never putting elemental sulfur on until I fix the drainage. When you put elemental sulfur on and you have poor drainage like you do, then your elemental sulfur is going to turn to hydrogen sulfide instead of hydrogen sulfate like it should. And when it goes to hydrogen sulfide, your soil will smell like rotten eggs. The elemental sulfur isn't going to do what you want it to do, and you got problems out there. So forget about that. No elemental sulfur till you get that field tiled. But you certainly could do ammonium sulfate as a nitrogen source and get more sulfur out there. I'm all for that. If you said, hey, I got a cheap source of gypsum, and I could throw out 500 to 1,000 pounds a year, wouldn't cost me much. I'd be willing to do that for a few years and just see how that goes. But again, that can't come at the expense of my N, P, K, or micronutrients. We've got to make sure we get those addressed. If you still have money left and you want to do something, yeah, I'm probably going to hit it with a little bit of gypsum. I'm not super worried about the 60% calcium thing. Because that's on Neil's test, and on the Midwest Labs test, 55% calcium is pretty close to 60% on Neil's test, but it could go the other way too. So if you wanted to try some lime, you certainly could, but you're going to have to bring the pH back down with elemental sulfur, and you don't have the drainage taken care of, so I'd say lime is out, elemental sulfur is out till you fix the drainage.
All right, thanks for the question. I had a question come in from Fisher, who says, guys, how much better does spring wheat do on average compared to winter wheat or vice versa?
And winter wheat typically does better than spring wheat in our geography. Go ahead.
And if your winter wheat fails, do farmers just plant over the top with spring wheat in the same year?
Sometimes. Otherwise, they plant something else. Usually, like in our geography, if the winter wheat fails, they go to soybeans. It's possible they might go to corn, but a lot of times you don't find out till relatively late in the spring. And at that point, they go, hey, we want to break the disease cycle anyway because wheat's a grass, corn's a grass. and they just go to soybeans. But they could certainly go corn or something else too. Sunflowers, I mean, all kinds of things. There are lots of different options out there.
This went in from Seth. He said, was listening to you guys talking about insects versus mites. I'm just curious, do you farmers in your area ever use beneficial insects? Or do you farmers typically spray for insects and mites every time?
Yes. Yep. They spray. Interesting story. So years ago, well, I was in college. I took a job with an ag chem company for a little while, and they had some great entomologists with them. Well, one of the guys was the former longtime entomologist at South Dakota State University. And he said, Brian, the challenge with introducing these beneficial bugs that everybody calls them is we don't know what they're detrimental to. And all of a sudden, we build populations of that. Now it causes some other problem in our society. So he said, watch out. Be really careful if you're ever going to use beneficial insects. Stay tuned. We'll get to more of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag coming up next.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit valent.com/maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an AgroLiquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Save plenty of green on select John Deere compact utility tractors during the Go Green Save Green event at C&B. Payments start as low as $253 per month. Visit DeereEquipment.com. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
From machine storage buildings and farm shops to dependable buildings to house your livestock, regardless of building size or use, Morton has a building for every budget. To learn how we can help you expand your farm operation, visit MortonBuildings.com.
Want a product that will give you nitrogen all season long? Then you want to try Envita. Envita gets directly into the cells of the plants, and it's easy to apply, foliar or in furrow. Envita provides the flexibility you need for your farm practices. Whether you want to reduce your nitrogen and maintain yield, or maintain your nitrogen and increase yield, Envita fits your farm. Envita SC formulation is OMRI registered. To learn more about Envita, visit azotic.com. That's AZOTIC.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. We are in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time right now, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. Get this email from from Sam down in North Carolina, and Sam said, hey guys, I recently finished Neil Kinsey's Hands-On Agronomy book, and I've got a couple of samples here from pastures that look like we may have a balance issue out there. Specifically, the calcium to magnesium ratios are off. But here's the other thing. These aren't Neil Kinsey lab tests, so I'm not really sure if they even correlate to those. So I did convert these Malic 3 extractions into parts per million on the nutrients that they covered, but I think I'm going to send some samples down to Kinsey as well. So just curious, what are your thoughts taking a look at these samples?
Okay, so it's relatively light soil. We'd call it medium textured soil, 12 for cation exchange capacity. pH is pretty good, 6.5. What he's talking about with the calcium magnesium thing is 57-28 and 58-30. So the magnesium's a little high, the calcium's just a little bit on the low side, but here's the thing. If I add these numbers up, which I'm going to do right now, let's see, I got 57 plus 28, so that puts me up to 85 plus 6 for potassium. So all of a sudden, I'm at 91 and 6.5 base saturation, or 6.5 pH. I mean, that doesn't really add up because your sodium is so low. So where I'm going with this is I don't know that, like, okay, so we use Midwest Labs typically, and we'll use Malic 3. But if you sent a sample to them, the same soil, I bet it's not going to come out 57-28. I don't think that it will. So I think the numbers are just off just a little bit. And I can run the calculator. I'll run a calculator here if I have a little time. But anyway, I'm not that worried about that. What I'm more focused on always is all the nutrients. And really, when you're talking phosphorus, 110 parts per million, and again, this is Malic 3, so it should be that high or more. Potassium, you're at 6%, which sounds good. The thing is, it's medium textured soil, so it's only 267 parts per million of potassium. So not bad, but we don't want to be neglecting that moving forward. Otherwise, you know, you've got some sulfur at 24, you got copper at 2.5, zinc at 12. I mean, these levels really are not that bad. So honestly, it's more of a focus on nitrogen. And if you want to throw a little gypsum out there or something, you certainly could try to raise your calcium and sulfur, flush a little magnesium out. But I don't know. I'm going to see if I can pull that calculator up and I'll see if I can run some numbers. So I don't think there's any real major issue, but just make sure you continue to focus on all your other nutrients as you go along here each year. That's probably most important for your soil.
All right. Thanks for the question. Get this one from Chemo out in Hawaii. He said, I've got a farmer with low calcium, but optimal pH. It's 6.7. All the other nutrients are high or slightly high. I'm just curious, can we correct that low calcium without throwing off all the other nutrients and throwing off the pH?
Yeah, you can. If you would like to add some gypsum, for example, that's going to give you more calcium and more sulfur, so that's not going to be a real problem. So I wouldn't worry about that. Again, just like with the last question, it's basically the same. pH is good. We want a little more calcium, and we want our magnesium percentage to go down. You can use gypsum. We have no issue with that. But just make sure we're not neglecting all those other nutrients.
All right. Thanks for the question. I got this one from PEP who said, I've got a sandy soil. It's an ancient sand dune. My soil has about 30 pounds of salt per acre, and it does not flush out despite having soil with the highest chance to leach. Now, I tend to have nitrogen and micronutrient issues. My preferred method for adding sulfur would be using K-Mag or gypsum. It's not a huge issue in our soils. Just kind of curious what you think about movement through the soil. Why would salt, or it doesn't say what kind of salt, doesn't flush out even in a sandy soil?
Well, just because it's sand doesn't mean your drainage is perfect, number one. And what happens a lot of times is when your plants are stressed for moisture, then you're going to be pulling more stuff up from way down below in the soil. There could be capillary action moving stuff up. And also, the big thing is when you have evaporation, which, where did you say it was from?
Didn't say.
Okay. But when you have evaporation of water, what does it always leave behind? Salt. And 30 pounds of salt is not a big deal. I don't really look at 30 pounds as any problem that you've got going out there. Now, if you had 300, I'd be concerned. If you had 3,000, I'd be really worried. But yeah, 30 pounds of salt I don't think is a big deal. And I think just with normal evaporation that you're going to get off your soil, it's probably going to leave some salt behind. That's my guess. Oh, by the way, I ran the numbers in our calculator, and his numbers that he had on that last test, so going back where it was 58 and 28, or he said 57, 28. I actually got 58, 29, so my numbers
pretty
darn close, and 6% potassium. So, yeah, it was actually fairly close.
All right, this one from KW over in Illinois. I was able to watch Neil Kinsey's seminar online, and I noticed one thing that he does a little bit different. All their recommendations are broadcast. On our farm, we've got highly erodible soils, so we're doing strip-till or no-till. We prefer to strip-till, and we put everything in a band in one pass. I'm just curious on a few things around strip-till. Where do you soil sample to determine? Do you do build rates and those types of things? And then also, have you noticed nutrients moving around through the soil if we're throwing them out there in the strips? We do try to plant corn and beans on the same row every year, and we've been testing in the row.
Yeah, and that's probably what I would do if you aren't moving the rows around, is test in the row. But honestly, we find the nutrient removal charts are pretty accurate because when we started strip tilling, this is 15 plus years ago now, we did tests in between the row and in the row just to compare. And if we were putting on what the chart said were crop removal rates, well, you know what? In between the row and in the row, our levels are about the same. So it didn't really seem to matter. We're not real big on build programs in the strip because you can overload with salt real fast. Plus, then you have inconsistencies in your soil. So in other words, if let's say you're running 30-inch rows, every 30 inches you get a lot of fertility, and in between you don't. So there are some concerns with that, plus the fact that we oftentimes, as farmers that raise crops, we think about the crops, but we also need to think about beneficial soil microbes. And that's one of the things Kinsey talks about as well. Having good levels of all nutrients out there really help the soil microbes in a lot of cases. You want your pH balanced, calcium, magnesium, salt, all these things. If things are in balance instead of, oh, I got an overload here and then I got too little over here, you hopefully are going to have better beneficial microbial activity as well. So just something for you to think about there, but we certainly understand the challenge of no-till and strip-till, because when you're not doing tillage, you go broadcast and, you know, you got nutrients like P and K, they do not move well in soil. So no, things like P and K, zinc, copper, they're not moving. Now, if it's sulfur, nitrogen, boron, sure, they're going to move no matter how you put them on. So we got to be a little careful with those, what we call immobile or less mobile soil nutrients.
All right. Get this question in from Keith, who farms real close to the Mississippi River. He said, we've got a stainless steel tank, a 90-foot boom on our sprayer, and stainless steel boom pipe. The last couple of years, we've been having some issues with residues in the sprayer. We use Resicor, we've used Harness Max, and then later on, even though we're cleaning out the tanks, we're seeing some issues show up, especially if we get rained out and things sit in the tank. What would you guys do? I know Roundup is an awful good tank cleaner. What's the procedure to remove something like Harness Max?
Yeah, but with a stainless steel tank, I mean, it's always triple rinse and use tank cleaner. But besides that, where we see issues a lot of times, it's the top of the tank.
He has some hoses. The boom itself is stainless steel, but there are some hoses in there, and he's thinking about potentially replacing those.
Yes. So that's where a lot of times things get hung up in the ends of booms,
filters
inside the spray tank on the top on the inside. I mean, it doesn't get cleaned off super well, so there are a lot of things that can happen.
Yeah, there are a lot of little parts in there. So, yeah.
We've also learned the hard way that we have to keep working on spray tank cleanout improvement, because it's not easy. And if you don't do it right, you end up with some little issues. Usually it's only cosmetic, though.
Hey, thanks for the question, KB. Really appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.